Why are recession predictions always wrong, and what forecasts are saying about today's economy? And also, how landlord rights are being eroded by squatters. I'm Matt, host of the Bigger Pockets Daily Show, and today we have these two stories to talk about. Obviously, in the news, squatters have been a major issue. And then also, for the last 2 years, we've been talking about how the economy will be bad, how it will be good, how the recession is coming, and how the end of times is coming, depending on who you ask. So for our first story today, why are recession predictions always wrong? We've been on a seesaw over the recession predictions for the last couple of years. And listening to recession predictions in particular is important for real estate investors, not because it impacts the price of housing in any way, but it does free up cash in lending. And we'll get into that in a little bit. And in general, you should just take recession predictions with a grain of salt. But to summarize what we're talking about here, so the recession seesaw for like the last 12 years has been wild, to say the least. In the lead up to 2020, there was a 10-year bull market. Now, if you know anything about economic history, 10-year bull markets are the most rare thing you could ever see. They don't really happen, especially in the last 100 years or so. But from 2010 to 2020, there was a 10-year bull market. A lot of the predictions, of course, was the bull market had to end, it would end. And if you're an economist making predictions, your best bet is to just say, the bear market's coming, the bear market is coming. And once you're right, you can say to the world, you're right. But it just kept going. And some economists started to suggest that maybe we solved economic cycles forever. Maybe the 2010 Dodd-Frank Act, which was a response to the 2008 recession, solved all of our problems. If you don't know about Dodd-Frank, Dodd-Frank basically brought in a ton of new financial regulations. A lot of financial institutions had to follow new rules that basically said you have to have higher standards for credit lending. That was the biggest thing. Also formed the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, which, depending on which side of political spectrum you fall on, you may like that or you may not. Ultimately, people thought that with all of these new regulations, we had solved credit cycles, housing cycles, economic cycles forever. Well, COVID hit. And we had a very short recession. After that, inflation jumped. And our favorite federal chairman, Jerome Powell, suggested that in March 2021, inflation was transitory. So if we paint the picture here, everyone was freaking out over COVID. Supply chain shocks were immense. Demand had spiked. There was not enough supply to meet that demand. Prices go up. That's inflation. However, there was also a massive surge in money supply, not only from US government spending, but also because the Fed started buying up a bunch of mortgage-backed securities on the market and other assets, pulling a ton of stuff onto their balance sheet. And this pushed money into the economy. So there's more dollars. All that together, inflation started to jump. It got up to 9% at one point in 2022. In the meantime, Jerome Powell kept suggesting inflation was transitory, and that became the buzzword of 2021 into 2022. But it wasn't. Inflation was not transitory. It, in fact, was baked into the economy. Yes, supply chain constraints did impact inflation, but ultimately, 9% inflation in a two-year period is baked into the economy. We never hit a deflationary period, and today, we still have 3% inflation, which is 1% above the Fed target of 2%. So inflation was never transitory. However, because of the inflation issue and all of the problems that we had coming out of COVID, a lot of economists just simply said, recession is coming, the hard landing is coming. And the minute the Fed hikes started to go through in terms of the interest rate hikes, economists were like, yep, this is it. Yeah, we are going to hit a hard landing. The recession is coming. The economy is in bad shape. And this painted a picture for consumers, especially, that, wow, we have a terrible economy. Even though we had pretty decent GDP numbers, a pretty good labor market, although you can make the argument that those were just recovered jobs from the pandemic and that more white-collar work was actually in dire shape because there was a ton of layoffs from tech companies. All of that aside, economists once again jumped to the conclusion that the economy was going to collapse and that the odds of a recession were anywhere from 60 to 90%. All of them were wrong. Now we're in, you know, April 2024, and all of the economists are saying we basically hit the soft landing, which is the opposite of the hard landing. Soft landing being the Fed was able to raise interest rates, albeit late in my opinion, and that avoided a recession, and now we have hit a soft landing, except they're now predicting this 5 minutes past midnight. Like, they are late. They are late. But because they get to say this, everyone thinks they're right. So after the break, we're going to talk about why this matters and why this matters to real estate investors in particular.
Okay, almost time for the show. We'll get right into it after this quick break.
Welcome back. So obviously we talked about recession, all of the different economists saying this and that and being wrong 90% of the time. Before we get into the next story about an infuriating squatter issue that is becoming a massive issue across the country, we have to talk about why recession predictions being wrong actually matters to a real estate investor, because it does. It really does. So I'll start off by saying, obviously, I work in the media. I try to be a good media person, but I work in the media, okay? We live in a sensationalist society where the scariest and absurd headlines rule the airwaves. Unfortunately, that is the harsh reality of media. And it's because consumers respond to it. That's why. It impacts an investor's thought process when headlines are too sensationalist. And when almost all of them are, that does impede their decision-making. Because what else are they supposed to believe? Now, the most experienced, advanced investors will be able to cut through that because they've seen the realities on the ground. They know what to expect. But for rookie investors or anyone who has one to five properties or just don't have the same amount of experience, they're going to listen to what the headlines say, and especially from the headlines that they trust the source, such as Bigger Pockets. And so all of this to say, ultimately, stop listening to recession predictions and just stick to the facts that you can verify on your own. And I talk about due diligence all the time, but do your due diligence before you start listening to what the latest economist is saying about the recession coming. And then finally, I'll just say recessions aren't bad for real estate investors in particular. Now, I'm not someone who thinks that, you know, we should bet on a recession and hope that it comes. I think recessions are ultimately bad for people in general. But for an investor, we all know that the best investors make the most amount of money during a recession. We know that for a fact. Why? Because when everyone's scared, you should be ready to jump on the best deals. Also, remove 2008 from your mind when I say this, because that while that recession was caused by a subprime mortgage lending crisis, it was just a bunch of bad debt that caused that recession. However, recessions generally have nothing to do with housing. And what actually happens is that recessions will force the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates, which makes lending accessible to an investor and significantly cheaper, which, you know what that means? It means cash flow, and it means getting properties that you wouldn't otherwise at a cheaper rate. With all that being said, it's the same thing as eggs. Every year, eggs are good for you. The next year, they're bad. The next year, they're good. The next year, they're bad. Just verify your sources. Listen to the people that you trust and who actually give you legit news. And of course, a shameless plug, Bigger Pockets, especially the Bigger Pockets blog and the podcast and the YouTube channel. We all are doing our best to give you news that is objective and accurate. And so you can always follow us on those channels to get the right news. So for our next topic, we are going to talk about the erosion of landlord rights or just property rights in general, because it's getting pretty, pretty bad out there. So before we get into my thoughts on this, I'm just going to read you this bizarre story that came out of New York a couple weeks ago. So in New York, a landlord was actually arrested for trying to protect her property. Adele Andaloro inherited a $1 million property in New York City. She came to find some unwelcome visitors in her home. And the story that comes after this is just absolutely insane. So I'm just going to read you an excerpt from a recent Bigger Pockets article on this story. Quote, Andaloro said she got fed up and went to her family's home on 160th Street with a local TV outlet in tow on February 29th and called a locksmith to change the locks for her. This is because there were actual people in the home. There were squatters. Now, of course, changing the locks makes sense because if there are people who broke into your house and you can't get them out, you should just change the locks because they're not even your tenant, right? It's understandable, but it's not even really the best thing to do because it's taking the law into your hands. And as the article will progress, we'll see what happens. So when she goes to change the locks, the squatters in the home started arguing with her and saying that they had rights. And then the police were called. And the craziest thing is that the squatters called the police on the landlord. And then in a bizarre change of events, under the law, it is illegal for the homeowner to change the locks, turn off the utilities, or remove the belongings of the tenants from the property in New York. But they're not tenants. But New York believes that they are tenants. And they can claim squatter rights after 30 days. And so the police, they come, they check, you know, what's going on. The squatter says that they have squatter rights and that the landlord is trying to illegally evict them. And after all the discussions go down and everything, Aunt Laura was arrested and taken off the property, and the squatters remained in the unit. A landlord was arrested for trying to get an illegal entrant out of their home. What happened here? And it's getting worse because since COVID, we've seen a 40 to 50% increase in these types of cases. They're happening all the time. And it's only now really hitting the news. People are paying attention. So in Oregon, a squatter was bragging on X that they could, quote, steal a property. And they were bragging about it based on Oregon's bizarre squatter rights. I mean, this is just unbelievable. So why does this matter? I think it's pretty obvious. If you're a landlord and you own property, do you have full rights to that property? Do you actually own it? Or can some person off the side of the street happen to walk in or break in at that, live in it for 30 days without you knowing, and then suddenly say that's their home and you have to go through a full-fledged court process to get them out, which obviously costs you money, obviously takes time. Not only are you paying for the legal fees there, but you're also losing out on the vacancy part of that. That's one. That's the biggest thing that matters here. On top of that, I will say, and you might find this to be controversial because you're likely a landlord or some sort of investor, I think it is extremely important that under the law, tenants have more rights than a landlord in the sense that they should have a higher degree of protection under the law compared to a landlord. Some might say it's equal. I do happen to believe that the tenant should have the better end of the stick, like a 60% to 40% favorability. Reason why is because in any sort of tenant-landlord relationship, the landlord almost always has financial leverage compared to the tenant. I mean, almost always. And so given that the landlord has a higher degree of power compared to the tenant, the law should compensate for that and make sure that the tenant has enough rights to protect themselves. But beyond that, there's a broader problem in the sense that when these things happen, it does make squatters and tenants look bad, but it's a reaction to the villainization of investors and landlords in particular, which I will say we have done a terrible job at clearing our name and making ourselves look good. To most individuals who rent and are not involved in investing or understand the landlord's perspective, they think we're terrible. They think we're greedy. They think we're just trying to get as much money from them as absolutely possible. They think that we don't care about them. They think that we're gentrifying neighborhoods so that we can get rid of certain people and only raise the rents. They think we're doing all they think. They basically think we're evil in some ways. And that might be a very harsh statement, but that is the facts. It's the facts. And so how do we fix that? So in the short term, I'll just say that there are some states that are better for landlords than others. So back in 2020, Bigger Pockets actually did an analysis with similar results to an original analysis by Brian Davis at Spark Rental. And the most landlord-friendly states happen to be West Virginia, Arkansas, Louisiana, North Carolina, and Alabama. Now, I will say that we are doing a new report on this soon, so we'll be able to change this data this year. But we also found that the worst states for landlords, or the most tenant-friendly, so to speak, were Vermont, Delaware, Rhode Island, Maine, and South Dakota. So that's what you can do in the short term. You can protect yourself by going to these states and operating there. In the long term, it is essential that we change the narrative about investors. We have to. There's literally no other way around this because we have been challenged on so many fronts as of late in terms of landlord rights. They're trying to tax us more. The government is trying to actively make it harder for us to buy greater increments of properties once you're past 15. You know, they want to tax you at a graduated rate until you get to higher and higher amounts. They want to remove institutional investment, which that's a whole entire other argument. Maybe they should. Who knows? But ultimately, the landlord in almost all of these cases is the one getting beaten down. I'll also just quickly reference a rookie episode that we did, 369, where we basically talked about rent control and how that actually doesn't even work for either party. It harms both. And that specific example was in Seattle. Ultimately, landlords are getting beaten everywhere, even in places where they're trying to find a compromise. What we have to do is we have to get involved with the community. We have to get involved in politics. We have to figure out the supply constraints. We have to figure out the building codes, the zoning guidelines. We have to get involved. We have to not only advocate for ourselves, but also advocate for compromise, because anyone who's ever studied politics knows that in history, the only time we ever made progress was when we actually compromised on things. We can't always get our cake and eat it too. This is not so much an ultimatum to investors to say, get your act together, but it is a warning that there is a very, very deep disgust for our profession. And unless we take action to actually solve those issues and not just pass them off as a bunch of entitled people trying to make a buck off us, in fact, we're not going to get anywhere. And it's only going to hurt what we do. So those are our two stories today. You can check out the Bigger Pockets blog to learn more information. We have all these articles on there where you're constantly covering landlord rights, constantly covering the squatter stories, constantly covering recessions and the terrible predictions by economists. We cover everything you need to know to become a better real estate investor. Once again, my name is Matt Meir. You can find me at the Bigger Pockets blog. I write there every now and then. And I also do this podcast every 2 weeks, so you can listen to my thoughts and opinions at any time. And I will be back updating you on the latest information in the next one.